I'm gonna try and sorry, it's my fault. Your hand was looking to make this quite an interesting presentation, but unfortunately, like I was telling him, that he caught me in one of the busiest weeks of my life. And having said that, I have to say this issue that I'll be sharing with you or discussing with you, it's not particularly one of the easiest area, even for black people like myself, because of there's a lot of secrecy behind it, undergirded by sacredness and holiness. So, partly so that's it kind of makes it very, very, very difficult for to give a very academic approach to it, you know, especially since I'm sitting with students and professionals alike. So your view of life has always been, have to be subjected to a particular criteria. But I'll try my little best and do justice to this perspective, you know, that is right at the back of your household. I mean, most of you guys help us when we are black. Hardly do we ever get into, you know, conversations. And I think what would actually make it difficult to have, you know, that philosophical conversation with them is precisely because of the educational level. It would be very difficult for you to have academic conversations with them, you know, to categorize certain aspects, you know, the most basic aspects of how they embrace spirituality around, you know, the worship of ancestors. So let me just read a quick, so I'm gonna try and read from what I prepared. It's not long, and try to, you know, build my conversation around that. So the introductory part is that the purpose of this is to help to orient a person who would like to understand African spirituality, especially for the purpose of evangelism. After all, Zanzi is a very large and diverse country, and our traditional rituals or practice are very diverse. There are a numerous ethnic groups that are present on the country and Africa as a whole, and so therefore there is no single creed or orthodoxy that can easily summarize the rituals or the practices. On the other hand, the scholars have attempted to dismiss approaching African spirituality as it is, as if it's impossible to have nevertheless, or brought back to the fact that there are a number of fundamental similarities in the structure of indigenous spiritual, you know, practice and approach. So basically, African spirituality is not documented. That is the reality, and that has always been the challenge since the dawn of colonialism. Because Western civilization, you know, coupled with Christianity, was infused in the practice of how the imperialists, you know, managed to integrate themselves within Africa. So they come across and they came into contact with these people who had their own deity and how they interpret their own deity. So throughout the development, you know, Africans have never had the opportunity to say, look, can you just sit down, leave work aside, and kind of understand where we're coming from as a people? So there's about 1, 2, 3 aspects which are going to build the core of my argument. The first one, it is the Sangomas. Sangomas is predominantly Zulu. In my language, it's Zulu from the Christian. It's Ngaka. Ngaka is a doctor. In this case, the spiritual doctor. The second one, it's Lebollo. Lebollo is like an academic. It's like an institution within African spirituality that enables a young man, a young woman, into that space of having that spiritual practice. Then, to conclude, I'll be speaking about family. This is an area whereby you get to see African spirituality at its best. So, the Sangomas, mostly, unfortunately, are categorized as evil doctors. You know, they look weird, they look scary. They do, whenever there's an African ceremony, they're always in the forefront of issues, like boogeymen and etc. They're just weird because wherever they are, it's dead skin, doesn't smell nice, there's blood, there's goals, it's just a mess. So these people carry a significant, they play a very significant role in terms of connecting the spirit world and our reality, the physical world. In a sense that in order for one to become a spiritual leader, either Sangoma or a healer, because there's actually a difference between a Sangoma and a healer. But for argument's sake, let's just agree on spiritual leader, just to make things easier. The process is your ancestors, whom are your intercessors between you and God. That's where ancestralism comes from. We don't necessarily pray to ancestors, for argument's sake. It's not like I pray, but for the sake of the conversation. They don't actually pray to ancestors. What they do is that the ancestors communicate on the behalf to God. That's the bottom line. They always believe that there's a transcendent being beyond the ancestors. So you die, you are welcome into the world of ancestors. That's why when you die, there's a particular way through which there are a few rituals that you have to go through before you can properly transcend into that world of ancestralism. So what happens is that for you to get to operate as Sangoma, you have to have something that we call visitations. They visit you, ancestors. But what is funny about how they visit people or their aspirant Sangomas, it's through ailment. One of them, a headache. Each and every person or practicing Sangoma across South Africa has had one of the worst headaches ever. The reason being is that your life has to seem as if it's about to evaporate before your eyes. It has to appear as if it's either that you accept the calling or not. That is the first aspect. The second aspect is that then one of your leaders within the family, either your grandmother or your grandfather, has to have the ability to decipher what that illness means. So after they identified that aspect of your health, then they will have to recommend that you go see a spiritual doctor, whom will be better suited, equipped to interpret why you're going through what you're going through. Then from there on, you get to be indicted in terms of why you're having what you are experiencing. Then from there on, it will be decided as per the council of the ancestors through the mouth of a Sangoma. Then you go through all these rituals, then you become a practicing Sangoma. That's the first aspect. The second aspect is that we have a practice within the black culture that we call initiation school. I'm sure most of you guys have read a lot about, you know, boys dying in the bone rooms because of health issues and etc. So right at the very center of those institutions, from the Eastern Cape to Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and KZN, right at the very center of the initiation school, which we call it in Sesotho Lebollo, coming to manhood, if you want to go through the process of attaining that status of being either a woman or a man, you have to go through that. So there are practical steps and rituals that you go through that are informed by the spiritual perspective. Hence that position over Sangoma. He's the one that actually anoints leaders within the initiation school, because there's a belief that your ancestors have a particular agenda for you and your life as an individual. So it's not like there's a blanket way of doing things. While you are there, they will individually consult for the sake of you having to understand your journey as per your clan. Because as a Makhele, it's my surname, I am from the Bakwena, which is a program. That's my clan. You find a Mufuge, someone saying whom is Puga, which is a form. Then you find other sayings with different clan names, because our sayings, they carry a symbol within the lineage of my family. So that's how initiation schools are operated. There is a leader within that who is not necessarily a Sangoma, but is appointed, anointed by a Sangoma. The last aspect of this whole process is a family. Soon as you graduate, as a young man, as a young woman, there's an assumption that you've been equipped to go start a family. You are taught how to treat a woman. You are taught how to treat a husband. You are taught how to carry yourself in society. You are taught how to make yourself better and contribute positively to, but the most important, how to carry traditional, family traditional practices, which in most of the time, on a constant basis, depending on the circumstances that you go through, you always have to consult. But about 60% of what you have taught in this initiation school, it's something that you can do for yourself. The 40% is just for clarity. That's where you come across spiritual leaders or Sangomas or Makas. So, in a nutshell, that's how a black person is integrated with that world of spirituality. Am I presenting, am I doing justice in terms of laying the framework? Because I think at QA level, if I didn't really present myself very well, then we'll be able to take each aspect. It's the Sangomas, it's the Lebollo, and the family. The family is where this spirituality actually takes me. For example, when someone is born in a particular family, there are certain things that you have to do that are unique to that family. In some instances, they cut the umbilical cord and they keep it because it has its own significance. In some instances, they have to either slaughter a goat or a sheep because it symbolizes something else. In some instances, they have to do a particular ceremony because it carries that significant, you know, it connects them better, or maybe it illuminates, you know, a particular aspect in terms of their lineage. But that essentially has to be under the guidance of a Ngaka. So Ngakas, you have your Sangomas. These guys are the ones that if you go there and sick, they help you to heal. You have those ones who are a bit more shady. If you want to get rich or powerful, you go there to them, do their rituals in order to get your wealth. The unfortunate part is that, I'm sure you have read, whenever you come across an article whereby people's heart has been, you know, taken out, just know that individual was a sacrifice for a person. Some, and I have to be honest, some of the most powerful business black men in South Africa, they do consult these people. People's lives get lost. But right at the center of everything else, it's these individuals who are sangomas. They are the ones that carries that divine message from God through the center ancestors to us and vice versa. If you want to reach out, if you want to understand your life better, if you want to understand your purpose, you have to go through them again. And family is where you get to fully understand, realize the impact of sangomas. So yeah, I think without delving into much, because I get excited whenever I have to have a chat on these issues. So if you have a question for clarity on either sangomas, initiating the school, and how these things bring themselves in a family household, you're more than welcome to us.
Any questions? We have a microphone, but can you use that microphone?
It just needs to be plugged in. So, yeah, I'll use this one and I'll just do that.
Okay. Where's the question?
Hi, thank you for the talk. I had a student who was being called by the spirits. She had a very bad incident at school where she slashed her wrists to pieces and blood all over the place. When she recovered, we realized that this was some reaction to something that happened in class. So, Flora, why did you do this? The spirits are calling me. And apparently, she said she cannot refuse. If she does, she will lose her life. Is that a reality or not?
Well, you know what is funny about that is that I actually have a sister who's a, well, she used to be a traditional healer. But not your typical sangoma. All that she did, she used to use a candle and water to service her clients. One thing I realized the last time I had a conversation with her is that they don't actually kill you. They don't. But they'll get you to a point whereby you feel that life is inevitable. They will never kill you. There's never been, I saw with my own sister, when she came to the Lord, because I remember this other time I had a conversation with her. We grew up she has had this migraines and sickness after sickness and sickness after sickness. Then my uncle, because someone from the family has to actually pay for the whole sickness, not your own parents. That's the most funny thing about it. There's someone who is designated to take the costs. So my uncle was quite surprised about the whole thing. So what happened is that then my sister went to initiation and she eventually graduated into being a traditional healer. 2 years, 3 years earlier on, I used to have a conversation with him, because normally when we had a chat, she knew obviously I was going to be very critical about. But then I had a chat with God and I said, look, that I'm not gonna engage this person, because every time when I come into it, you know, and she knows intellectually I'm gonna engage her. Knowing her to be very stubborn, she will always justify the fact that there's a prayer component element to it. So I shouldn't be worried. You know, so it's okay. But 2 years earlier on, she decided to say no. She wasn't working. That life wasn't sustaining. My nephew was growing up. So it wasn't making sense to her in a way. Instead, she was suffering even after taking heed of the call. Then she made a conscious decision and said, no, I'm not gonna. But if you are going to say, I'm not gonna, you have to draw to something else. That's when she drew to God. As hidden in my love. And ever since that, nothing has actually happened to her. My sister, she has a career now. She's living a comfortable life. She's living a life. And what she still doesn't want to, I think it's out of respect, because there are elements, other elements to that life which she feels are very positive to society. You know, so she doesn't actually want to, because I said earlier on to her, I think a couple of weeks back, and I said, look, Ashley, like you said, you know, I want to go to an initiation school just to learn about what is it, what's the value of that in society. Then she said to me, look, the unfortunate part about it is that you can, you yourself, knowing me, you can actually find value in that, but that world does not really, it's not regulated by the moral that will benefit you in that. Because there is a lot of secrecy that leads to understandings. And especially as referring to a person of my character, knowing me, that they will actually kill me, which is a reality. There's a lot of corruption to it, and again there's a lot of evil to it, which is unjustifiable and which is undergirded by the secrets, which is, you feel, if something is like giving, why must there be so much secrecy around it? So at best, to answer you is that I don't know of anyone who has ever died. There's a couple of people whom I know who said, to hell with this calling. You know, God will never call me to ministry through the message of death. So I don't know, but basically, physically, I know they go through hell. That one is the end.
Thanks. Any other questions? Thank you so much. So a lot of the things you've mentioned are really, really, really good things. An initiation process to become a man, family, on its own, it's good. So what of this whole system can be redeemed through the message of Christ that doesn't have to be lost?
I think your response to what you to that question is, it's precisely what I've always advocated. I mean, if you look at, you mentioned a few, they help you to become a good citizen within society. But there's another element to it, which is fraught with secrecy, secrecy, under the banner of Satan. Let me just tell you something very interesting. Hope it doesn't scare you. There's a relationship, a very sacred relationship between Sangoma and water. Sangomas and water, it's a match made from heaven. There is this thing, and it's not even a secret, especially from the face of it, that when you're called into that world, depending on the area that you're going to be, especially, because there are those ones whom do not even, their job is, if you are sick, they go into the wild, because the land is sacred. They'll go and dig up a few roots to, you know, create health and medicine. That's their calling. They don't pray for you, they do anything, they just look at the symptoms, they organize something, they give you, and you get healed. And there are those ones whom are called, I think that's the most prominent one, the Sangomas and the Nakas. You go to the water, you go there for a couple of months. There is a reality that there's something that lives there in the waters, and it has always been identified as a snake. But it is called that demon, like a grandfather or a grandmother. But it has a masculine, you know, disposition to it. And that, wherever, let's say for example, there's an area within a part of town whereby Sangomas initiate and etc. They go there. That area of town is a no-go area for ordinary folks like me and myself. You can go, but I can go. Because if I go there, I don't come back. What happens is that the only way for me to come back, this is happening in South Africa, guys, by the way, did you know? If you go there, a sangoma has to get involved, something has to be communicated to him. For you to get released, there has to be a sacrifice. Most of the time, it's a cow, but it's a specific cow. Let me tell you something very interesting. When this cow is released, this cow does not, you don't go slaughter. This cow is released, it goes into the water and it melts, it just disappears in the water. There was an incident back at home from Bronstown when my uncle was growing up. He had a friend who had a family in Kwakwa. So what happened is that during school holidays, this individual went to Kwakwa and unfortunately could not come back. So there was a message that a cow has to be sacrificed. A cow was bought, a cow was taken back. But there was some sort of a scuttlement from whoever was on the other side. This cow became part of society. So the idea was, so long as this cow was still alive, that individual was still alive. It grew so big that everyone in my town about it. I think it died about 8-7 years ago, a cow. Since it was born, it went there in the late 1970s. That cow was there, it was so big. And it was part of the community. It stayed in the yard. It wasn't a normal cow. But it wasn't, you know, disruptive of, you know, the normal day-to-day of the community. So to respond to what you were saying, because of the secrecy, it becomes very difficult for us to understand exactly the grounds of justification if these things are hidden in secrecy. But one thing I know for a fact is that initiates, when they come back, there are those ones whom, you know, there's always corruption anyway, even in initiate schools. Some guys who go there, they come back in the top for part of the gang. They leave school, they become, you know, menaces in society. But I have one or two friends of mine, together with my sister, whom I've seen them, contributing positively to society. But again, even those ones who are from that side, they still don't want to. Because of, I think, experiences. There are certain things those people saw there that they are unwilling to talk about. So it becomes very difficult for us to sit them down and say, and talk. As much as my sister, I try my own because she gets very emotional. So, to answer you, like I said, I've seen the value in some of my friends who went there without saying much. They're good citizens, they're good fathers to their daughters, and good husbands to their wife. Which is, I think, and it is imposed, that form of discipline. Because if you don't, by the way, if you don't live by the code, you can actually get reprimanded. Which is unfortunate, because we live in a very, you know, pluralistic constitutional South Africa, in the context of South Africa. But I know there are people who, you know, for the sake of the gospel, who epitomize the very values that Christ espoused. So I think, I hope it will respond.
Thank you. I've got a question. Because I do believe a lot of us here as friends or work colleagues, or who is in some way or another part of ancestral worship, how do we approach those people in love? Well, that's one of the questions that I have. You know, how do I actually approach those people and engage with them to share with them the gospel and the love that Jesus gave?
I think I love that question because that has always been the area that I've engaged. The fact that aspect of that my community threatens livelihood, it's unjustified. At that level, how can a God who's loving, supposed to be all loving, or caring, or powerful, threaten a life with sickness and hell, brings misery, poverty to the body, to the soul? Because that experience is torture, like with that gentleman who said, someone is actually cutting yourself, who intervenes? I mean, so from that perspective in its own, from that premise, it opens up a conversation. It gives you an opportunity without even having to touch on so many aspects of the conversation that you are, you know, about to get into with that individual. Because I know for a fact, black people whenever engage this issue, they'll always say that Christianity came with an imperialism and etc. Yes, I always concede that what you see as white civilization, it's not necessarily Christianity. That was the privilege of man. That was the heart of that individual. But you can't really say it was the gospel. Yes, missionaries were complicit because they were not open enough. This is how you gain a typical South African corporate, because most of you guys working in those areas, because they're going to hit you with technical questions. But again, on the flip side, they themselves can't seem to conceptualize their spirituality as well. So at the most basic, you can't advocate for a God who visits and imposes himself through misery and hardships and death. God does not. How best can you identify with someone who is a meaning? He's a spiritual fact. Sorry for to say that. You understand? It's what he has to say. Secondarily, that wouldn't carry, because primarily he threatened, you are coerced. So, and it doesn't speak into the free will that God gives us to love Him. God, even for Christians, He doesn't impose Himself. The reason why He gave us free will is for us to love. It's more satisfying for Him to know that even through your hardships that you love. So, on that aspect of its own, in corporate South Africa, I know of everything. And let me just give you a term. Some of the individuals, if you come from the Eastern Cape, the Xhosas are one particular group in South Africa that practice initiations than any other in South Africa. I don't know if most of you guys played rugby, you've come across, you know, guys from the Eastern Cape. Those individuals are the ones that really take pride in their culture. So on the basis of that, simply you can't accept a God that threatens your life. I think that can open a door. And it's no secret. It's not sacred that it's just an open fact that some Bomas, whenever they come into contact with their destiny through ancestors, it's a very painful journey. So I think on the basis of that, then you will be able to open up and have a conversation to next.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you for your talk. I was wondering about, on another level, of engaging people from a background of ancestralism. Because, in one sense, like if you try to engage someone, they'll say, yes, but it actually works. Like you know, they have encounters with the supernatural, like they'll go see some woman, they can tell you why you come there, to heal you. And then on the other, and then some people say, no, that's just superstition. And also from my side, I'm in the hospitals quite often in some profession. And you see the botched procedures of some gomas, and people come there and you're like, oh my goodness, no, why? But they just, like, this is not healing people, this is really, really bad for them. Is that just some kind of cognitive dissonance that it's like this is happening but we're just ignoring it, or is that part of the secrecy, or are there actual cases where healings do occur? And if so, how do you engage someone? You say like, this is wrong, and they're like, no, look, it helps me, or it's something evil is helping me.
I had a very interesting chat with Johan, I think 2 days ago, whereby I told him My grandfather died in the 1960s, my maternal grandfather. And how he died was covered with mystery. So, because Africans are very spiritual, my mother consulted traditionally. I think I was 14, 15 years old. Hey, I'll never forget that night. So this gentleman, my mother used to go for prayers, because they do pray. Like I said, they pray to ancestors, and the ancestors will connect them with God, you know. So what happened was, my mother used to go there with my mom, my friend's mother. So what happened is that this gentleman came around 6 o'clock, I think it was Saturday or Friday. He prepared the whole thing, but there was no slaughtering of stuff, because he's not your typical Sangoma. So he gave me, when he left, he gave me instructions that he said, around this particular time, please burn these things and make sure that those steps, and just monitor your mother for about 30 minutes or so. So this chap left. Now we had supper with mom, and it was just a normal night. But then, obviously, around that time, my mother actually burned the whole thing herself, but she was still safe. Dude, after 15 minutes or so, my mother turned into a zombie. I'm telling you my own mom. She walked around the house. Weird, she could not, I couldn't see, she couldn't see me. I had to run all over the place. So after that incident, that scary incident, I came to a realization that, flip, this world actually exists. Personally, I saw that burning something and someone just turns into a zombie. Then the following day, she had to go there and come back after prayer. So what happened was, because my grandfather died, he used to work for, I think, a delivery company or something of that sort. One afternoon after work, he decided to rest close to a bigger bank. That's how he passed on. So no one actually said much about it, because there was, like I said, there's a lot of secrecy to it. So in my house, before events leading to that night with my mother, there used to be ants. Because that world, when it communicates itself, it communicates itself through nature. There are a few things that happens into the house. So someone of that spiritual position or reality, the only person who can interpret to actually mean what happened 40 years ago. The same incident, you remember, that happened in the book of Genesis, when Moses was, God designated him to help the children of Israel. You remember what happened? He gave Moses supernatural powers. But the Bible records similar powers were demonstrated by Pharaoh's magicians. Because the devil has the means to do crazy things. So from an intellectual perspective, there is the good side to it. I mean, I don't see anything wrong in herb, using herb to heal your physical ailment. But the spiritual side, justifying the spiritual, then becomes a question. That's why you have to revert back to say, look, but how you got to be integrated into this world, let's check about how did you. Okay, I got a calling, it wasn't nice. The minute they say it wasn't nice, then you ask, how can you serve a God who threatens you physically? How do you justify his love? How do you justify his mercy? On the flip side, there are fake traditional practices. The same way that there are witch doctors who make people powerful through sacrifice, and guess sacrifice of what? Of human. And it's not unique to one to South Africa, but internationally, human sacrifices have been happening across generations. And it's a big record in the world. So, at the level of you work in public hospitals, and the sad part about it is that due to the socio-economic aspect, some of the people that you meet there, they're not as intellectually articulate, then it becomes a challenge in itself. At best, pray for them, hope for the best. The Bible says, Paul says, we plant the seed, but God makes what? He grows, makes it grow. So I think at best you can do, if you can't engage them intellectually, just pray for them. And for your colleagues at your place of work or as a student, then you can have an intellectual conversation with them. Then you get to balance and win it.
I'm wondering, how is God defined? Or is God, you say, not defined but just experienced? And is there a way to come to know God other than through Samoas as priests or middlemen, women? And why is the secrecy accepted as, why is it okay? I mean, you know, what are the thoughts around that? Is it an approach to God that is seen as acceptable and perhaps humility approaching what you can't really define exactly? And also, how is opposition or heresy, how is that handled? So if you were to say, you know, kind of confront people and say, well, look, you know, there are too many inconsistencies in your behavior, I don't believe in you being entirely truthful, how is that accepted?
Interesting
question. Are you getting my old mouth? So how did they define God?
In the context.
Why the
secrecy?
Is it
St. Thomas? Is there any other way except for St. Thomas?
Yeah.
And then heresy?
Yeah, question.
Good luck with this one.
Well, to answer that is, in the context of South Africa, if I were to base my response to it, is that society both live in a postmodern dispensation whereby everything is regulated, everything is subjected to a constitutional, the supremacy of the constitution. Even spiritual practices are not immune, and unfortunately, spirituality does not conform to external standards. They are the law unto themselves. At least that's a blanket statement that covers everything. Even within Christianity, there are certain things that the Constitution permits. Discrimination on the basis of a view. So the same principle can be applied in this current state of traditional spiritual practices in South Africa. I think the sacredness, secrecy, like I said, the secrecy to justify the sacredness. There are certain realities that you have to equip, because if it becomes too common, then it becomes too cheap. There's a conception or a notion that if it's common, then there's no need, you know, for it to enjoy that level of happiness, level of one. That is just basic common sense. So that's why the secrecy, that's why even the corruption is hidden. It speaks to exactly what my sister said to me. Look, if they expose you, that's the scary part. If you get exposed to that world, you can't just be, you have to finish the whole process, because there's a lot of people who can't seem to complete the process, especially at education school, who feel, look, I just seen too much. Then, because of corruption, with the lawyers and the agents, people lose their lives. And the key is that, unfortunately, it was unfortunate. There's a lot of unfortunate reasons behind it. But people who have been there, they know that it was just murder That is the problem. That is always the problem with the secrecy behind it. And again, because it's operating within society, which is regulated by the constitution, it can't seem, to really express itself the way it should. Anyone, I mean, recently, every time you read an article, there are people who have, who open up initiation school for purposes of making money. They have no interest in uplifting these people. That is why their graduates are more trouble, or more troublemakers in society than actually contributing positively to society. To a certain extent, one would say, okay, it's hard to keep this secrecy. It will be justified by the standards, the living standards of their graduates. Sometimes we allow ourselves to justify a certain practice because of the graduates. If they are contributing positively to society, then we can conclude and say, I think it's a justified spiritual practice. There's no need for us to know what is happening there. So long as, you know, they're in a loving relationship, it's not hurting anyone, then it's okay. You have heard that natural. So I think if you can borrow that principle and apply it, that's precise. How you experience God is precisely it varies. Relationship, what they emphasize is within the black community, if I may add, within the black community, within the black household, there's a lot of emphasis in terms of relationship, connecting with your elders. I actually, while growing up, I loved my grandmother more than I loved my mother. I don't know if it was because of the disciplinary issues, I don't know. But I can't get a lot of wisdom from them. And that's something in within we believe in a sense that if I go get married, start a family, my mother is old, my dad passed on, I have to take my mother. My wife becomes her daughter. That's how it works. She comes and stays with us up until her last days on earth. So those are some of the principles that I espouse within that aspect, a positive aspect of African spirituality. So the only way you can rebut that is precisely what I said to that is how the spiritual justification of in relation to our identity. Then you can have a conversation and apply your Western philosophical, you know, analysis in case and induct them in the degrees of identity. So I don't know if I did, because it was quite an interesting one.
Yeah, it's a good answer. I think it's, I probably asked too much.
But I do think, it's in, you can maybe say if I'm wrong, is the notion of a personal God is not God being personal, being intimate. If I listen to you, God is
Ancestors are intimate. Can say sinners disobeying God's commands. Now, in this traditional African spiritual world, this is such a concept of sin, and if so, who decides what a sin is?
It's a very interesting one. As far as I know, you can't disobey. When you deviate from your feminine way of doing things, like we have this thing in Islam, we call it pabadi. It's like it's a ritual that we do just to show appreciation. If you deviate from that, it's tantamount to a sin, because they are going to reciprocate.
So it's like a world standard of
exactly.
How to do things.
Exactly. It's not personal in a way. It's just general. They don't fiddle with what you do on a day-to-day basis. They don't follow the condition of your heart. They don't convict you. You know, it's just basic stuff. You know, they don't emphasize fornication amongst the youth. Actually, as far as I know, when you come from the mountain, the first thing that you need to do is to get in contact with a woman, if you are at all, to prove yourself. So you see, it perpetuates patriarchy. So that's one aspect that I know that it's a negative aspect, and it doesn't actually address the issues of personal sin or sin. Instead, it reduced it to certain standards, but which are not personal, but they are more communal. I think that's an area that I haven't actually thought about. Thanks for the question.
Thank you for the I just want to ask you, is there a conflict of guilt when you don't
there's a concept of guilt. I don't think there is a concept of guilt. What rather happens is that it's a misfortune. You respond to a misfortune. You can still hate your brother. But if an unfortunate event happens in your life, then it is interpreted as a deviation. That's the only way. There's no guilt, none whatsoever. Like I said, I was responding to the gentleman that it's more of a standard, it's like a code of conduct. If you don't live according to this, then obviously there are following consequences that looks to rectify that. So it doesn't speak to your heart, it speaks to the general. The communal way, because you have to complement yourself. I don't know if it speaks.
I understand 100% your answer. I mean your question. Let me put it like this. Let's say I'm trying to remember something very close to. Let me make an example. If you have a headache constantly pounds your head, then you go to a physician, medical doctor. If your medicine it doesn't stop, then you decide to go spiritually. When you get there, they won't say to you, you are sick because you did something wrong. They'll say you are sick because you did not carry out a task. You did not do something so that you get to perpetuate a particular feminine ritual. Let's say you relocate from Kronstadt to come to Pretoria. You get so busy with your life, you study, meet people, then you get involved in an accident. You get a visitation from your mother and say, look, the reason why you got into an accident is because you got too busy. You deviated from, that's the reality. That's the reality. So that's why I'm saying there's no guilt. You deviated, you do not conform to certain. And you know there was an incident in I had this other friend of mine. He communicated this verse. I'm going to be brief. What happened was this gentleman was working, got retrenched, got money. After he got money, he decided to go start business. But in order for him to get successful, he needed to consult a traditional healer, and he gave him, you know, ways for him to get rich. part of it was to make sacrifice, not necessarily people, but on a particular season of the year, he has to go again. The unfortunate part, when he was there by himself, he was only alone. He got himself into a covenant, which only he knew. The gentleman died. Later what happened is that, come that time of the year, there was no sacrifice. Whatever he was in contact with came back. The wife died, the first daughter died, second, the last born of the family, while she was at church, that's when that reality people got to know. And guess what? She was not the one talking, but something inside of her soul revealing exactly how people, why people were dying in the family. So sometimes we get ourselves, our ancestors get themselves into these covenants that have seemed to have a ripple effect on the family. That's why in certain families, weird things happen. And it's a common reality amongst people in location. So that's why I'm saying that it's not a guilt issue. It becomes more of a standard issue.
Yeah, I think, last question.
Quick point of clarification. When you said the sunrises go to the water, do you mean into the water, under the water?
That's an area, that's a sketchy area.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's a lot of secrecy. I've heard someone say they actually go there, they stay there for months.
Under the water.
Under the water. You know what the lady said to me? They said, normally when they come from there, as soon as they come out, they have to vomit something. That shows that these people have been in a different mental state. They vomit something that not a sane person would consume, just to show that they get into a different state of mind for that time period while they're still there. You know, so it's a very scary, area of I really want to bring my sister down and ask her to reveal more.
Okay, thanks, Paul. Let's give him a hand.